Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net.
Recorded live from the mats of Radical MMA in New York City, the Martial Culture Podcast, your source for in-depth combat sports and martial arts insights with Coach Rene Dreyfus and Matt Peters. Bring the bell and let's get it on.
The bell's been rung and it's getting on. I got to figure out a better way to do that. The introduction is getting a little static.
No, I think it's great.
All right.
Consistency is not a bad thing.
Consistently bad is the bad thing, right? Is that bad?
Well, then people won't expect anything better.
That's my goal in life. Consistently disappoint people and then they'll never expect anything from me. Sorry to my wife. We're back again. Matt Peters, Coach Rene Dreyfus, live from the mats of Radical MMA in New York City, podcast sponsored by NutriChef NYC, and thanks to ChristopherMedia.net for hosting and distributing our podcast on their great network. So, let's spend a little time getting to know each other.
Sounds great.
And have the listeners know us a little bit as well. So, Coach Rene.
Yes, Matt.
You have a long history of fighting and beating people up and training and learning and bettering yourself within the martial arts world.
Yeah, I started martial arts in 1975, so I go quite a bit back. Martial arts has always been part of my life, mm-hmm. and I'm very lucky for that. I never thought that I would do martial arts as a career. I always just thought it was just something I loved. But then I realized, why don't I do something I love as a career? It took me a while to understand that make that connection, you know? But yeah, I've been doing it since 1975. I've studied a lot of different martial arts. And then here I am today.
Wow. So what got you to start martial arts? Was it a driving
really,
passion?
A really mean bully.
A mean bully? Is that how all the stories start?
That's how it starts, you know? And it also, New York wasn't just like it is today in 1975, mm-hmm. and then also later in the 80s, it was not as nice a place. So, mm-hmm. but yeah, it started out with being bullied as a kid, and you know, developing that kind of deep, you know, those scars. And obviously, you know, these are first world problems. You know, it's not like I was like a child soldier or anything like that. You know, but still, when you're 5 years old or 6 years old, and you don't feel safe. In school, and you don't feel that you can take care of yourself. It's not something that is pleasant. Mm-hmm. So I never told my parents that I was being bullied because, you know, you kind of get ashamed of it. But what I did do was watch. There's this thing called Drive-In Movie, which was Channel 5. It was like at 12 o'clock in the afternoon or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturdays, every single Saturday. And anybody who grew up in New York is a little bit my age. They know a Drive-In Movie. And every single time, the kung fu movies would come on. And it would be, it was not like Jackie Chan. It was like the more, you know, five Deadly Venoms or, you know, the you know, these old 1970s Shaw Brothers things, you know. Mm-hmm. And my dad saw me mimicking the moves that I was watching. Because I'm like, okay, let me watch this. And let's see if I can defend myself. And my parents thought it was super cute. But my dad's like, well, if you're going to do it, you should probably learn from a proper teacher.
Yeah.
And that's how I got started.
Well, thanks, Dad. That's a very observant father.
And, you know, it's funny because everything comes full circle. My dad was born in Germany in 1913. And the martial art that everybody talked about when 1913, he was born, but when he was a kid, was jiu-jitsu. And he didn't know what karate was.
Mm-hmm.
He'd not heard, this was in the 70s, and my dad wasn't exactly into martial arts or anything, but he didn't know karate. He didn't know the terms taekwondo. He didn't know anything, but he knew jiu-jitsu because jiu-jitsu was already kind of out there. It wasn't Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but that was the thing. So the first martial art he actually looked for was jiu-jitsu, but there was no jiu-jitsu in New York then. And he was a physician, and one of his patients was a very dedicated karate practitioner and said, why don't you take him to my academy? And that's how I got started.
Wow.
Yeah. But now, of course, I do mixed martial arts, but a very strong component of what I do is Brazilian jiu-jitsu and judo, which is a form of jiu-jitsu, you know. So
And you spent some time in Japan?
I spent 6 years in Japan. I left in 1992. I left America in 1992, and I lived in Japan until 1998. Unfortunately, I got injured in Japan. Had a little accident, not on the mats, and got injured, and had to come back for some surgery, and kind of really messed up my leg. And I wasn't able to use my leg properly for a couple of years. And I had some surgeries and lots of therapy and rehab. Mm-hmm. But it didn't stop me. And that kind of bringing me back from Japan was kind of good, because I was able to see the transformation of the martial arts scene here in America or in the West. Where in Japan, they had some things they were on the cusp of, and some things they were left behind. So it was very interesting to see what was going on in Japan at the time, and then what was going on here at the time. And there was at that time, there wasn't much Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in Tokyo, very, very little, and not at an extremely high level, although there were some practitioners. Mm-hmm. But most of those guys were going to California, Brazil to train. And then they would come back and kind of teach a small group. There was some freestyle grappling, which is, I did do that there, and I trained judo there as well, but not Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. When I came back, I was exposed to the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, so that was great. But when I was in Japan, I did train with some amazing judo fighters and some amazing, what's called the freestyle Japanese game, which was a little bit a mix of maybe you would want to call Russian Sambo, a little bit mix of catch wrestling, and some people like Sakuraba or Imanari or all these fighters that have drawn on. But that's something I was exposed to too there, and I was very lucky to train with some really great guys. I was sad to leave Japan because it was a really interesting place, but it was a great adventure. But I needed something different, you know. And I got some great things in Japan, but I needed something different. And it just happened that accident took me back here. I recovered. And then I trained a lot in California because I was very lucky. My sister lived in California, and so I could go out there and train. And then also I was in Brazil for a little bit, just a little bit, not too long, but I was training there as well.
Wow.
And
you've been everywhere, man.
Yeah, yeah. And it's great. Mostly my training's here in New York. And but I had the challenge. It wasn't a choice. As a martial artist, I really felt that MMA, or it wasn't MMA back then, it was an NHB, no holds barred, or Vale Tudo, which is things I knew I had to do that to satisfy something in myself to make sure that I was real. And as a martial artist, emphasis on martial. There's no disrespect to people who do Tai Chi or do any martial art for more recreational, more personal, or more spiritual reason. You know, I did train some Aikido Jiu-Jitsu when I was younger, and a lot of the Aikido or the Aikido Jiu-Jitsu world is not oriented towards combat. They're oriented towards a more spiritual development or something like that. Tai Chi, same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever. Whatever floats your boat. I'm not here to say any one way is wrong, but for me, personal, you know, self-protection and efficiency of combat and proving that what I was learning could work for me was very, very important. And to do that, I wanted to go into a situation that had, you know, extremely limited rules and to see what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I did that 17 times.
Nice.
New York was a weird place because it was like kind of legal, kind of not legal. Nobody really knew, and people thought it was legal. So it wasn't exactly, you know. And back then, you know, MMA wasn't like now. It was like, you know, if you did MMA, you were some sort of social pariah. Mm-hmm. You were not lauded. You're not like, oh, you know, Conor McGregor. It wasn't like that,
right.
And it wasn't a thing to brag to your friends about. Although every guy under 30 years old at that time, you could see it changing. If you're under 30 years old, you were renting the UFC tapes at Blockbuster. It was interesting. There was something new here, and you could see that it was going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
If you're over 30, you know, the John McCain age, you're like, what is this blood sport? Human cockfighting. Blah, blah. You know, but you know, the young kids, I was young then. I'm not young anymore. I was younger. But everybody was like, oh, that's interesting. But it was not socially accepted. It was not something you tell your mom that you're doing.
No, if I had watched, one of the old UFC 1, 2, and 3, and my mom walked in the room, I would have gotten in trouble.
Right, exactly, you know? Right. They're like, what are you, watching porn? You know?
Tank Abbott's and those kind of characters coming in.
Oh, my God.
That would have been a conversation I would have had.
Oh, that fight, Tank Abbott, when he fought that Hawaiian bone breaker martial art guy, and he he almost crippled him. I remember that. That was crazy.
They were so crazy back then.
It was nuts. They were nuts.
No weight classes.
Nothing. It was real. It was so nuts.
And everybody was specialized. It wasn't mixed martial arts.
No, it
wasn't. A boxer versus a Muay Thai, you know?
There was, there was a proto mixed martial art evolution in Japan because it actually, Japan had this ring called Shuto, and they had another ring called Pancras. But Shuto was really grassroots where it was. The whole idea was become a striker, become a thrower, and become a submission artist. So basically mixed martial arts, you know? And they had that idea, and you saw some fighters come out of there, but they didn't quite have the technical excellence in certain arts that other people had. So when they fought Japanese fought Brazilians or fighters from America, they did well, but sometimes they were outclassed too. But they were pushing that evolution. And, that Sakuraba came out of that tradition. And a lot of the really good Rumina Sato, a lot of the fighters came out of the tradition. Uno Kaoru, they came out of that tradition. And, you have to really respect them because they were pioneers. Mm-hmm. But really it started evolving in America. And the first real mixed martial artists were kind of from the Lion's Den. That was old Ken Shamrock School. And yeah, they were crazy, but they were really learning kickboxing. And they were really learning takedowns, and they were learning submissions. They were putting it together in an interesting way. Mm-hmm. And really threading each one together. Because it's not like just learn kickboxing today. This is not what MMA is. It's not what NJB was. If you learn one day you do kickboxing, one day you do wrestling, and one day you do submission fighting, that's not mixed martial arts. That's doing different things. It's like I'll play tennis today, football tomorrow, and soccer the next day. They have nothing to do with each other, right? What it is how you combine them and thinking about the interesting permutations of combinations. That's what MMA is. And it started, and Frank Shamrock's the really first elite-level mixed martial artist where he was segueing for great wrestling, and he's the first person in the UFC that I can remember what had a KO from a throw.
Hmm.
So he picked up a Russian fighter, I believe it was Igor Zinoviev, picked him up and threw him, and it was absolutely, a tactical. Like he said, I'm going to throw him on his shoulder to make that throw really damaging.
Mm-hmm.
He wound up breaking his collarbone and dislocating his shoulder. The guy went into shock right there. And then he also had that epic match with Tito Ortiz, which nobody knows anymore, but they had this great match, and it was the first real match where you're like, oh, wait, it's not just a jiu-jitsu guy. It's not just a wrestler. It's mixed martial arts. But you're right. In the beginning, it was more style versus style. Mm-hmm. And then that was the first evolution. And then, you started having everybody start following him and evolving more and more and more. It's a great sport. Now, I do miss those old days. There's nothing better than like, okay, it's sumo versus karate. What's going to happen? It's like a comic book. It's fantastic. So I do miss those days.
True.
And I don't like the gamesmanship of, okay, I'm gonna play to the rules. I'm gonna put my hand on the floor. So I don't get knee in the face versus actually learning how to defend the knee. Mm-hmm. Because if you put your hand on the floor, they're changing the rules. But if you put your hand on the floor, even if your knees are off the floor, your opponent can't knee you to the head. That rule is actually going to be changed. But so there's a fight with Weidman versus Musasi recently where he started trying to play that game. And then Musasi timed it and then wound up kneeing him in the head and really, really, really hurting Chris Weidman. So, I'm not really into that gameplay. Like, I like to see what's functional
mm-hmm.
in a fight. And, MMA, it predates to me the UFC. I think MMA or MHB, whatever you want to call it, it's a movement. And the movement was started really in the West by a lot of different people, but the people who really got it going were the Gracies in Brazil. But it was also, there were other places too. And it's ideas like, how can we how can we find what's most effective in fighting? So it wasn't necessarily about, like, mixed martial arts is not the title I want to use. I want to use the title no holds barred or limited rules combat. So what's going to work if there are no rules? Like, what? Let's make this experiment. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have this theory that this move works. I come from whatever style. Then I'm going to test it out scientifically versus just taking the word from your instructor. Hey, this works. When I touch you like this, you die because my chi is so strong. Okay, well, and we laugh at that now. But, you know, let me tell you, in 1980 was kind of like the dark ages of martial arts where there was a lot of, people thought certain things would work. And we know that they don't. And obviously the chi example is silly, but that still exists, that people still believe that. But also that certain martial arts are functional was just taken as it's given. Okay, you're a taekwondo black belt or you're a karate black belt, and of course you're a killer. Well, not necessarily. Depends how you train. That's not to say that taekwondo or karate doesn't have a place in fighting. They have some elements that are functional, but much less functional in no rules context than we thought. And that's no disrespect to all the people out there competing on the Olympic level of Taekwondo. I competed in Taekwondo on a national level in my teens, and total respect, but there's a huge percentage of that which is what we call incestuous. No, what does that mean? It's nothing to do with families, but nothing like that. But it's sort of like, you're a boxer, I'm a boxer. We agree to these boxing rules. So more and more and more, what we'll do is we'll game play and do certain things according to the rules that the rules will allow us so we can win the fight more efficiently. Mm-hmm. So Hicks and Gracie talks about it. It's the difference between efficiency and effectiveness. So I'm using the rules to my advantage, so I'm a very efficient gamesman. But in a no-rules context, what I'm doing would not work. For example, boxers have this, what we call the Philly shell. Doesn't really work well when people start kicking your knee. So you can't do that much, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't work. Mayweather didn't really do this so much with Conor McGregor, but Mayweather's known for that side stance Philly shell. He's very known for that. And if you throw a low kick right to his leg, he's going to fall over, he's going to break his knee. So that doesn't work if somebody's throwing kicks or if somebody shoots a takedown. It's not going to work. So you don't see people fighting like that in MMA. You can't. It's going to get hurt. Yet you see a tremendous amount of boxers do that because obviously there are no kicks. And then in Thai boxing or in kickboxing, there's no takedowns. In wrestling, there's no submissions. So in wrestling, what you'll do is you'll go belly down on your back. You go belly down to avoid the pin. Well, if you go belly down and the person you're fighting is versed in submissions, he's going to choke you out. So there's that element of sports specificness, which I call incestuous. It only works if you're fighting the same style guy under those rules, mm-hmm. which is not reality. That's a game that people made. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in games. I'm interested in fighting. What I don't like about modern MMA is that it's orienting itself a little bit towards gamesmanship. Still real. It's still real. It's the realest thing you got there. But everybody knows, okay, it's 5-minute rounds. And then if there's no action here, the referee's going to stop. Okay, if I'm going to put my hand here, this is not going to happen. Okay, in this position, there's no knees. There's no this. There's no that. There's no this. Joe Rogan is actually very critical of the no kneeing a down opponent because it really changes the game. And I agree with him. Obviously, fighter safety has to be there. But I would like to see many more techniques that are illegal allowed, because that it's always like, well, what works in a fight? That's why I got into this, and I think that's why most people study martial arts is sometimes it's for fitness, but it can also be like self-protection. Some people are fans too of MMA for sure. But we get into martial arts because we want to have some functional way of protecting ourselves, our loved ones, and staying fit and things like that. But nobody wants to do something, at least I don't think, maybe some people, I don't know, but that has absolutely no relevance in the real world. Mm-hmm. So, well, maybe they do, I don't know, but I didn't. And so that's what always draws me to martial arts. And that's so when I see Tyron Woodley, or like we were just talking about you know, the Amanda Nunes, where it's a less action-packed fight. People are not going for the finish. People are playing the rounds and playing the scoring. It's a little less interesting for me. So going back to the old days of, like, okay, Gerard Gordeau versus Tilly Talila, you know, sumo versus kickboxing. And then you see Talila's tooth fly across the ring, and you're like, whoa! And, you know, when it's Hoist Gracie in a, you know, basic death match with Dan Severn, and, oh my God, he triangled him. It's so much more compelling to me, you know? Yeah. You know, no time limit, no weight class, no rules. That was the old, you know, I mean, obviously it had some rules, but very few. And that was always very compelling. I miss those days. Yeah. I miss them. I'm an old school guy. I miss them. So that's my background.
Yeah, I definitely love the early UFC fights.
Yeah.
You know, the 1, 2, and the threes and all that kind of stuff. It was definitely an interesting element to see those two styles come against each other.
Yeah.
You know, people realizing what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
And their characters.
Superman versus, you know, the Hulk. Who's going to win?
I mean, I grew up watching wrestling more than...
Like real wrestling or professional?
Professional.
Oh, okay.
The fake wrestling, the fake scripted stuff. And so, you know,
so
the
that's
Hulk
not wrestling.
Hogan's
yeah.
and the... And
professional wrestling.
Sorry. The world wrestler, WWE or WWF, whatever. So I was... When the UFC came around, they had those characters, you know, like Ken Shamrock and the Tank Abbotts and those kind of characters. I was drawn to it. And then you start watching it more and you see the technical aspect of it and you get more interested in that side of things as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting because professional wrestling used to be real fighting. It used to be a style called catch-as-catch wrestling. And the biggest sports tournament in 1916, I believe it was. No, it was during World War II. A little before World War I. 13, something like that, right? It was Gotch versus Hackenschmidt. And it was for the World Wrestling title. And it was the biggest sports event of the last 100 years. So, you know, catch as catch wrestling or pro wrestling was a real sport that had real fighting. And then, you know, it just sort of devolved into showmanship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think you have to understand that showmanship is, it sells. So, you know, you see the showmanship in the UFC now too. You know, you have to have that to make the sport stable.
Yeah.
And hopefully showmanship never eclipses technique.
Right.
You know,
I think the mixed martial arts or the martial arts community base is going to demand that there still be the level of quality in the fights.
I hope so.
Versus,
I hope so.
You know, entertainment value. Right. Unfortunately, the McGregor and Mayweather fight was kind of the opposite of that. I mean, they still had good talent.
Yeah, and it was real. It wasn't rigged.
Sure.
Yeah, but it was the closest thing to being rigged, meaning a total mismatch.
Yeah.
So that's like almost being rigged.
And if we want to go down that rabbit hole of conspiracy theories, we could do that, but I don't recommend it. But
what conspiracy theory?
Well,
though?
You know, that Mayweather was throwing the fight in the first couple of rounds, or
I don't think he was throwing it,
or McGregor threw the fight.
Yeah.
You know, things like that.
I don't think so.
People are talking a lot.
I think Mayweather coasted him with a good strategy. He said, let me make him think he's competitive, punch him out, and then he's tired because he's not used to going that far. And the pace of fighting is different between MMA and boxing. There's much more energy output. And this is not just my theory. If you look at the guys who train high-level athletes, they look at the performance, you know, the outlet. So boxing is more aerobic. There's a very little anaerobic quality because you're not grappling, so you're not wrestling, so there's no isometric pulling. Now I'm not an expert on you know, kinesiology in this. I should get my friend Jillson here, who is an absolute, we should have him on the show, he's an amazing expert at this. But when you introduce isometric holds, you're doing something a little bit more kind of anaerobic, and so the demands on the body are very different and they're much higher, and the pace of fighting, because it's a shorter fight, is much more. So when you train all your life as an MMA fighter, you're going to be revving at a higher pace. And you're going to burn out a little quicker.
Mm-hmm. Which we saw.
Yeah, and yeah. and I think Mayweather's like, well, of course, I'll let him punch himself out, and he's not going to be used to going to deep waters. And I think he even said that before. He's like, I'm going to take him deep waters. He's going to get tired. And I think he said that. I mean, I remember he said deep waters something, right? Yeah. I wasn't following it, I'll be honest. I was like, I'm not going to be part of this farce. But but I remember him saying that. I'm like, yeah, that's what he's going to do. And people are like, oh, he's going to run, he's going to run. I'm like, he's not going to run. He's going to stay there, and he's going to just get it. Let McGregor punch himself out. He's going to let McGregor punch himself out, get tired, and then he's going to go for the kill. Mm-hmm. And I said that to a lot of people, and that's what he did. I mean, I thought he would move a little bit more in the first rounds, but he didn't even move. He just kept his hands up and blocked and didn't eat any damage, but barely did anything. Mm-hmm. Because he's, you know, it's kind of playing possum. Like, and that's a standard boxing strategy. Look at Ali Rope-a-Dope. Right. That's exactly what it was. Yeah. It just wasn't on the ropes. He's like, let him get tired, punch himself out. All right, let's go. So, you know, you're going to say that he threw a fight? No. Then you have to say Ali threw the fight, you know, the first rounds. No, it was
I think Ali actually did throw a couple fights. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know that much.
Well, you
let's
know,
not go that far.
Well, you know, Ali is a real interesting guy because, you know, Ali has an MMA fight.
Does
Most
he?
People don't know that.
I did not.
So Ali dabbled in pro wrestling when he was, I believe, suspended. So he went to Japan, and he was supposed to have a fake fight with this guy named Inoki. But they just hated each other from the very, very beginning. They hated each other. Mm. So immediately went from fake to real.
Wow.
It is the most boring fight you've ever seen. But it's all real. So what Inoki is a wrestler, what he does is he just jumps to his back and starts kicking Ali's shin mm-hmm. and says, come down to grappling world. And Ali's like, no, you come up to striking world. No, you come to grappling world. No, you come to striking world. No, yeah. And it's an hour of that. But yeah. the problem was that Inoki kicked Ali's leg so much, he developed serious, very serious problems in his leg. Hmm. And that when he came back to boxing, he couldn't use the footwork that he had before. Hmm. I mean, obviously, age would probably have something to do with it too.
Sure.
But because of those serious fractures and damage, an hour over, watch the fight, over and over and over again, Inoki kicks his leg. And hard stomp kicks right to the shin. Developing all this damage in his leg that never went away,
wow.
which is why he couldn't perform his same usual footwork later on in his career.
Yeah.
One of the contributing reasons.
Interesting.
But he has an MMA fight.
Well, so. Wrestling, let's bring it back, professional wrestling, yeah. I apologize.
Oh, right, sorry.
Andre the Giant.
Oh, yeah.
He fought...
Iron Sheik. All
he
that.
Fought
yeah.
in Japan in a traditional sumo wrestling fight.
No kidding.
And he was drunk off his mind during the fight. Like, he famously would get really drunk. Like, he took, like, two cases of beer to get drunk. He shows up to the fight, and he's wasted. And this guy is, like, disrespecting him, and he's like, this is like a joke fight. Like, just it's a Conor McGregor kind of thing.
Right,
where
right,
he's
right.
just there to be a
yeah, right,
dead
right,
as
right.
the giant. And
Japan has a history of that, of, like, making, you know, freak show fights.
Yeah. So he's not like giving it any like whatever.
Yeah.
And then it becomes serious and he starts fighting back and he just totally destroyed this guy.
Really?
Yeah, it's
I find that hard to believe.
Andre the Giant.
That's interesting. I have to look that up.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I'm a fan of sumo, so I have to figure out what sumo wrestler it was.
It may not have been like a professional sumo fight. It might have been just for show, like some random dude that
did
sumo.
Because let me tell you, sumo guys, well, they're not MMA fighters or anything like that. There's a level of toughness in their grappling
sure.
that is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're, it's not a joke.
What they
it's like
do,
people
they
think,
do
oh, it's
well.
Just a bunch of two fat guys bumping each other. It's not. It's a lot more than that.
Right.
You know, it's like they have some serious skill there.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, it's very, very unidimensional. You know, it's like boxing. It's like one small dimension.
Right.
You know, but in that dimension, they're really good.
Mm-hmm.
You have to respect what they did. But yeah, speaking of sumo, though, you know, one of my favorite fights is Hoist Gracie versus Aki Bono, which is kind of a freak show fight, but still. It's like jiu-jitsu versus sumo. Yeah! Let's see what happens.
You like those?
I do.
Those freak shows are nice. They're fun.
They're
fun. Entertaining. Yeah. They keep you entertained.
Japan is like, you know... They get give you freak shows, but at the same time, they're kind of weirdly compelling.
Yeah.
You know, which is, I think Bellator is sort of trying to do that, but they're not doing it right. But, you know, they had the Kimbo kind of fiasco where he, you know, the opponent almost died.
Yeah.
And then Kimbo died like a few months later.
Yeah.
You know, so you know it's just, it's not a healthy
it's
kind of thing. Yeah. But sometimes Stanford style is always kind of interesting. You know, Street Fighter versus this, or he's making that story. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like we were saying that there always has to be some sort of story element to make things compelling.
Mm-hmm.
Besides technique.
Yeah.
And I understand that. Even I'm a victim. Even I'm like that. I want to see what happens when this goes with this.
Yeah, the rivalries. Yeah.
Rivalries, right.
Jones versus Cormier, those kind of things. You want to see the back and forth.
Yeah, and that is those stories. The great rivalries define sports. And sometimes those champions later on in their life, they look at those rivalries and they're like, that was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring you up to your level.
Right.
It's too bad that Jones and Cormier is so sullied now with, Jones positive steroid test and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because that was a very compelling rivalry in the modern internet. I was really interested to see if Cormier could evolve and maybe, take Jones out. He didn't, but then again, you don't know because of the PEDs and all that. I don't really know anymore.
Right.
So it's real sad. But the rivalries, we've seen a few of them in MMA and they're always, especially when they're both two skilled guys like Cormier and Jones.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah. It makes it definitely more interesting. It feels realer.
Yeah.
If that's a word, it just makes it feel like they're actually fighting and there's a reason behind it besides just money. And love of the sport.
Yeah, And then, but you get also, I think that's why Demetrius Johnson doesn't get paid. Because he's sort of like...
He's just a nice guy.
Yeah, he's like, I don't hate you. I have no rivalry.
Yeah.
But he's a sportsman. And that's kind of cool too. That's the way why... I did judo in Japan. And judo guys in Japan, used to hate MMA. Still to this day, a lot of judo guys in the organization are very anti-MMA. Particularly in Europe too. But in Japan. And one of my judo instructors, Professor Hirata... was like, no MMA. We didn't say MMA, but it was terrible. Peace, love, happiness. We just do it to be martial arts to be better people. And that's great. I get that. And the path of personal development. And he really emphasized, judo really emphasized sportsmanship. And that's something I like about Demetrius Johnson, that he's a great sportsman. He doesn't have to hate you to dismantle you. And turn you to a human pretzel, but that to me, that's cool. He never disrespects his opponents, and he just goes in and he's not just an athlete. He's artistic. He's like a Baryshnikov of violence. that's I just love watching that. So I don't even need the rivalry. And sometimes to see someone so classy.
Yeah.
That's great. George St. Pierre was like that too. He always impressed me with his being class, but he would also create a rivalry in a very laid back way. He's like this. And Brian Ortega is a new guy coming out who I love. He's from the Gracie Academy. And he doesn't create a rivalry at Trash Talk, but he said something recently that I love. I was like, this guy's a real martial artist. He's like, I'm very curious to see how people will beat me if they will. It's a really wonderful, it's not about the opponent. It's not the rivalry. It's the rivalry with themself, which is so martial arts. Like, I want to see how you're going to beat me.
Right.
And it's not arrogance. It's like, I really want to see how you think you're going to beat me because I want to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I'm a huge fan of this guy, he needs to work on his boxing a little bit, but that way of like, it's not you and I hate you and I want to do this. It's like, how can I evolve to be the most efficient and perfect weapon I can be? How can I chase excellence?
Yeah.
How can I live that martial art code of personal discipline and excellence and commitment and that's super cool.
Yeah,
the rivalry doesn't always have to be there.
The other layer of the onion of professional fighting.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So nobody says, Usain Bolt versus whoever. I don't even know. I know Usain
Who
Bolt.
Else runs?
Right. Right. Yeah. But you're like, wow, this guy's amazing. Or Michael Jordan. I don't know anything about basketball. Did he have a rival? Scottie Pippen?
Magic Johnson.
Yeah, I don't really know. I don't know anything about Larry basketball. Bird. Yeah, right. So maybe he had some rivalry, but I don't...
Not really.
Not really, right? It's like, how can he be the best most amazing archetype of this sport. You know, the best, the GOAT, the greatest of all time. It's not him versus someone else. It's how can you reach this ultimate threshold of human excellence? Mm-hmm. That's fascinating too, you know? So yeah. It's always like the back and forth, you know?
Yeah.
To me, that ladder is more interesting. But you know, confession here, sometimes the crazy rivals really do get me. You're like, ha, 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 I want to see that guy lose. I always want to see Conor McGregor get the crap kicked out of him. So I hate Conor McGregor. I freaking hate that guy.
Yeah.
I respect him. I can't wait to see Khabib submit him or someone. I hate that guy.
We'll see it soon enough for sure.
Yes, I guess we lost lots of fans now. All you Irish people will stop listening to our podcast.
We hate Conor McGregor. Don't listen. quick background on myself, if not as illustrious of a mixed martial arts career or martial arts career as Renee. I took 1 month of classes at a 10th Planet jiu-jitsu place, striking pretty much for a month.
Oh, really? Oh, you didn't do jiu-jitsu at all?
No. I just learned striking.
Was that in Rochester?
Yep.
Oh,
at Empire Academy.
Yeah.
10th Planet. That was a lot of fun. I just ran out of money, so I couldn't afford it.
You know, it's jiu-jitsu gets a big bad rap of being a little too expensive. But as a gym owner, I would like to say that it's not so easy running a gym.
I'm sure.
It's not like we're all like raking in the money and, you know, living, you know, on our beds of satin, you know.
this gym that I was in Rochester, they just expanded. They got like a warehouse. I mean, real estate's a lot cheaper in Rochester. And they actually got a cage. Like they have a full octagon.
Yeah, that's great.
So they're really on the up and coming. I actually was born in Germany as well. And your father, you said, was born.
Oh, really? That's wild. That's yeah.
My father was in the army, so we were stationed there. And
Were you born?
West Germany.
When was it?
Yeah, I'm dating myself. Dating
this is the old Fogies podcast. Old Fogey MMA podcast.
It was. I'm going to pronounce it wrong, but it was Wiesbaden.
Oh, Wiesbaden. Yeah.
And then that was.
I think my dad and I drove through there in the 80s. Yeah. You know, on the way to. You know, do the whole roots thing. My dad was a Holocaust refugee, so he had to get out of there fast. So, which is, I think, why he did appreciate. He always was supportive of my martial arts, you know, mm-hmm. because I think whenever you have some traumatic experience, that goes for my students too. You know, a good portion of my students have had traumatic experiences, and they want to have that again. They want to feel empowered, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, we talk about this in another podcast, but you know, what brings people to martial arts? And one of them is the desire for empowerment and for security. And that's legitimate. You know, I think that's great. That's what brought me into it.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to have. And so, you know, for me, it's always chasing effectiveness, not necessarily efficiency of the sport, but effectiveness in self-defense. And, you know, They don't always go together, you know. So you could be the amazing boxer, but you know, you don't have any idea how to defend a headlock, which is one of the most common things that people do in a street fight, you know. Mm-hmm. Or you don't know how to do any sort of restraining hold. So if you're a police officer, you need to restrain an emotionally disturbed person. You know, it's really good to know jiu-jitsu rather than having to beat them down to a pulp. And be accused of, you know, excessive force.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that being said, you know, I deal with a lot of law enforcement officers, you know, it's a really tough job and they're not really well trained very often. So, and, you know, if someone's attacking you, it's natural to be scared. So you don't understand what you're doing because you haven't had training. So you overcompensate. And then, you know, you get attacked for coming back. Now, that's not to say that there aren't other issues too. Like, you know, I'm not talking any specific incidents, but you know, there's always incidents that can be dissected in many ways. But I think for our community to have martial arts who chase martial arts that really work is very important, mm-hmm. rather than just, you know. Tai Chi or something like that, you know, which is great too, but there are aspects of our society that are not great. And whether it's law enforcement officers or a person who just walks down the street to understand that you can take care of yourself is a really great thing. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try and provide. And I think a lot of martial artists are in the same boat, you know, that's my background. And like I said, my dad came from the, you know, refuge of the Holocaust. So he was always very, very supportive of my martial art training. And I think that's why I also maybe have developed that passion, you know? Mm-hmm. They say there's always an epigenetic element to your personality. So, you know, maybe I have these, like, genetic programming from my dad's experiences, yeah. You know? But, you know, who knows, you know?
So let's talk a little bit about what we can expect in the next couple episodes, next couple weeks. We have some exciting guests in the pipe.
Yes, yes.
Some people that will be coming in talking to us about some great stuff. There's a fighter that is part of the NutriChef family that's in Evicta, the fighting club, Alexa Connors.
Oh, yeah, female fighter. Yes, yeah, for sure.
And I'm trying to get her. She's not local to New York, so unfortunately you'd have to be over the phone, but I'm going to get her on the show. She'll be great. She just had I think she had her fifth professional fight a couple weeks ago.
Fantastic. Good for her.
Yeah, she's doing really well.
I worked very briefly with an Invicta champion named, very, very briefly with, her name's Angela Hill. It's a wonderful person now doing, you know, really great things. Mm-hmm. She's mostly a striker, but I did briefly show her some grappling.
Right.
And, you know, I wish her all the best. She's a fantastic fighter. So, you know, the female league is doing great.
Yeah, they're doing really well. We're talking to, what's his name? I'm going to get his name wrong. Iron Sky. Have you heard of Iron Sky?
I have not.
Let me get it right before I ruin everything.
It's not that TV show on Netflix, is it?
No. Iron Army, I apologize.
Iron Army.
Have you heard of Iron Army?
I have not heard of Iron Army.
So we have, hopefully in the next couple weeks, Daniel Pierce will come in to join us. He's local, so he'll be right
wait,
in
wait,
here
is
with
he
us.
Iron Army?
No, he's the part of the Iron Army company. So oh. Iron Army is a supplement company. Oh. That is part of, they're working with Frankie Edgar. It's Frankie Edgar's company.
Oh, right.
And Daniel Pierce is kind of the brainchild behind the development of that supplement. Worked with Ronda Rousey and Misha Tate in the past. And he trains, where does he train? He trains in New Jersey.
Yeah, probably Hickard Alameda's Academy. That's where Frankie Edgar's based.
Something about Renzo Gracie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully he'll be coming in here in the next couple of weeks.
I'll have to steal myself for the Iron Army podcast.
Those are the great jokes you can look forward to in the next couple of weeks as well. Renee's special sense of humor.
Thank you. Yeah, it's very, very special, as in special bus special.
So obviously we'll talk about fights. We'll talk about breakdowns of any UFC events or any major coming up events.
I also were very lucky to get a friend of mine who is a striking guru, and I don't use that term very lightly. We're talking about, you know, evolution of the sport. This guy is taking, you know, the evolution of the striking element in a really awesome direction. And so I'm very proud to be working with him. I'm developing fighters, and he's going to be coming on the podcast too. It's Professor Ken, and he's fantastic. And I think to have his insights in breaking down the minutiae of the striking game is going to be wonderful. He's yeah. such a brilliant, brilliant guy.
Yeah, beautiful. There's a lot to look forward to in the next couple of weeks for sure. Yeah. I'm very excited to move forward.
Yeah, and I know we want to expand the discourse of martial arts towards something more than just fighting. But, you know, like, we're martial culture, so I'm really looking forward to, you know, we can explore what martial culture is and the history. I've got my master's degree from Columbia University, and I did it in Japanese warfare studies. So, you know, I think I can bring some historical perspective on things, as I do speak Japanese fluently, and and have researched a lot of, you know, what the origins of a martial art tradition is.
Yeah.
You know, this book waiting that I still haven't finished, you know, my wife says I keep finishing. So instead of the book, we'll just talk about it in the podcast.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I got really into anime in my high school years, and I tried to learn Japanese because I couldn't find any dubs of the shows I wanted to watch. So I had to either read them or learn Japanese. I couldn't do it. So,
it's my old karate instructor said, you know, when I started learning Japanese when I was 14, right? He goes, Japanese is like martial arts. You can do it. You just got to put a lot of time
right.
into it. It's, and he was right. You know, it's like, there's very few martial arts that people can't do. You just have to put the time in. You have to collect those hours. You know, it's the Malcolm Gladwell, you know, 10,000 hour rule. You need to make those minimum thresholds. And with that, Japanese is a perfect example of that, that it's not like Spanish. It demands you put those hours in. Yeah. So I'm not anyone brilliant for mastering Japanese, but I did put the hours in.
I'm still working on English. And once I got that figured out, maybe I'll work on to another one.
Yeah, me too. You know?
So this is going to be a very interactive show in the next coming weeks. We are going to be broadcasting somewhat live. I mean, we're recording live. There will be schedules put out. So, and there's a phone number you can call in. So interact with us during those moments where we will allow phone calls if you want to call in. We'll have segments available for that.
Will we also be doing, I want to ask you, Ken, Matt, just talking to Ken. Will we also be doing a question answer through maybe a Facebook page or something like that?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Okay, there is a Facebook page up.
Fantastic. So I'll let all my guys know who are abroad to chime in questions. I have a lot of friends in Japan and also in Brazil and also in Europe. Some of my students who live there now.
Yeah, so. Be involved. Control the direction of the show, where you want to see it go, and let us know how we're doing and what we can do better and be engaged.
Yeah. What is the Facebook page?
It's just going to be the Martial Culture.
Martial Culture. Okay, great. Awesome.
Yeah, we'll distribute that information via social media, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff, so everybody can find us once they're live.
Fantastic.
And hopefully we can get you guys involved.
Well, wonderful. I absolutely look forward to it.
Yes.
I'm so honored to be on this podcast with you.
I'm honored as well. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
So don't forget to check us out on iTunes, please. Leave a review. That's how we get moving up those charts on the iTunes charts there and get more people listening.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter at @Martial_culture and on Instagram at @MartialCultureCast. Please leave a review on iTunes and we'll see you next time on the Martial Culture Podcast.
If you like this show, please tell a friend. Please follow us on Twitter and like and share us on Facebook by searching for Christopher Media. You can subscribe to all ChristopherMedia.net shows for free on ChristopherMedia.net. Please make sure to rate and comment on all your favorite Christopher Media shows. Thank you in advance for supporting Christopher Media by clicking on the PayPal button and by clicking through to all the sponsors who support ChristopherMedia.net. Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net and thank you for listening.
Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net.